Today is Sunday, November 8th, 2020. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Keith and Nancy Green, spelled G-R-E-E-N. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Keith and Nancy. How are you today?
Good.
Okay. Good. May I have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone? Thank you. Keith, maybe we'll start with you. What year were you born?
1946.
And where were you born?
I was born in Maywood, California.
Where's Maywood?
It's somewhere close to Whittier, I believe, in Orange County.
Oh, so Los Angeles Basin? Okay.
But you know, I was born there, and I think we moved about six weeks from when I was born to Linwood, California, where my parents bought a house.
Where's that?
Linwood is next to Whittier. No, next to Huntington Park. Huntington Park. And Compton. I don't know if you know. I don't know the Los Angeles area anymore that well either. But I think that's. It's funny because you know, the Google came up recently with that thing where you could put in your address, and it would show you the house.
Okay.
And so I tried that, and the reason, and I knew the address because my parents made me memorize it, you know, in case I got lost.
Okay.
So I always knew it was 11247 Collier Avenue. And so I got Google, and I put in 11247 Collier Avenue, and it couldn't find it.
Huh.
And I kept looking, you know, and it showed me some maps, and it turns out some freeway goes right through the middle of it.
Oh my gosh, wow.
So it's not there,
huh,
there anymore.
What were your folks doing at the time?
My father was an engineer for, it was called, General Petroleum, I believe it was. General Petroleum, which ended up getting bought up by Mobil.
Okay.
Oil, and then, yeah. So, anyway, yeah, he had a job in the Los Angeles Basin.
Where was he from?
He was from, well, it's interesting. He was from Arizona and California and Oregon.
Huh.
Because during the Depression, my grandfather couldn't make money anywhere, so I kept getting these small jobs here and there. Oh, and he also lived in Glendale, Arizona. He lived in Glendale, Arizona. He was a, my grandfather was at one point was a highway patrolman.
Okay.
He got a job as a highway patrolman running from Phoenix up to the northwest. Where would that go?
Wickenburg. Up
yeah,
that way.
Like Wickenburg and that way. Anyway, and they lived in a little town that got flooded, I remember. Anyway, I can't remember the name of that town, but anyway, the story he liked to tell was about he had this route that he had to drive in his patrol car, and he couldn't drive it. It was too short for going the speed limit. You know, if you went the speed limit, you'd travel the route too fast.
Okay.
So he was always going. nobody would pass him. You know, it was like, he's a policeman, you know. So he'd like drive a ways, and then he'd notice there's a big old line of cars behind him, and he'd have to pull off the road. And
they'd all go by.
Go by, and then he'd get back on the road again.
Oh, gosh. It's kind of still the case today, you know. You don't want to pass the law enforcement, yeah.
No.
Huh? And so then you moved to Linwood. Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters.
Older, or younger?
Younger.
Okay.
Yeah, one is about 2 years younger than me, and one is the same age as my wife, Nancy, which is about 10 years younger than me.
Okay. Did your mom, she clearly was, I'm assuming, raising the children.
Right.
Did she do anything else? It's a big job right there, but.
Yeah, she did. Well, during my, during the time I was growing up, she eventually we moved to Oklahoma, you know, again, oil, and, she took class. Well, she was. I think she had taken classes before in California. I'm sure she had, and in home ec sort of stuff, especially cooking. And she was always making these really delectable cakes and cookies and stuff like that. And she decorated them really fancy. I remember one time, because my dad was a golfer, one time she made a cake. It was actually two cakes, and one was a tea.
Wow.
You know, so with a little golfer on it.
Huh.
Golf club. And the other cake was a green with a flag on it.
Oh my gosh. Huh.
But she liked to make stuff like that. She had all these fancy icing dispensers.
Decorations and, yeah. When did you move to Oklahoma? How old were you when that happened?
I didn't move. That was when I was in high school.
Oh. So let's go back to Linwood then. What was growing up in Linwood like? Oh my gosh. Huh. Huh.
I mean, we'd go to the movies and, you know, there was a food giant store not too far away and, you know, we'd go there. But I wasn't allowed to go around the block, you know. I couldn't even, I wasn't allowed to cross the street when I was little, so.
Did you all with your, you would have been 10 when your littler sister was born, did you do the classic station wagon vacations, or how did that work out?
Oh yeah, we did. We did a lot of vacations, a lot of, you know, the Yosemite and all those beaches along the coast.
Wow. Okay.
California.
Did you learn to swim in the coast there, on the ocean?
No, I think I learned in a swimming pool.
Okay.
The YMCA, I think. So,
Okay. And did you like camping?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And swimming, I like swimming. So, you know, we'd go, yeah, I remember being in little camps with big trees all around, and, you know, and then it was just like a 10-minute walk, and there was the ocean and
okay.
all the amazing waves and all that stuff.
Nice. Did you have...
We lived only, you know, it only took probably maybe 45 minutes to drive to the ocean from, you know, from Linwood.
Okay.
It's not that far away.
And would you go out there on weekends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a... Actually, I had a cousin, or an aunt and uncle, and a cousin, a couple cousins anyway, that lived in Venice Beach.
Okay.
Which is, they lived in the neighborhoods, the regular neighborhoods, you know, like 1950s stucco houses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then when you crossed it, you were in this. It was a beatnik place. You know, it was like all these really old, sculptured kind of buildings and windows and really foreign sort of things like wine shops and and stuff and but. You had to walk a couple blocks through that area before you got to the beach, the actual beach. And there was you could hear bongo drums in the coming from the windows up above. You know, the second floor. So it was a real foreign place for a little kid, anyway. And then when you got to the beach, there was probably still are all these muscle men sort of they're kind of like platforms with sand all, you know, made of cinder blocks probably with sand in them, and then different kinds of equipment that you could, you know, like a bar that you could do pull-ups on. And but it was always, you know, there's always had these guys with just incredibly bulging out muscles.
Huh.
Anyway, that you had to walk through that to get to the over to the ocean, and the ocean was had a the beach kind of there was a out on outside of the ocean was a out off the beach was a breakwater. And so there was a kind of peninsula that went out there, and you could sometimes in low tide you could walk all the way out to the peninsula. There's all kinds of creatures out there. And,
oh wow!
And other times you couldn't. But anyway,
did you have eye problems then as a child?
Yeah, I did. When I first started school, so when I was 4 years old, it was, you know, just after World War II, of course. So, if you were four, you went to first grade. So
okay.
First grade, I think, is when you're four. So, anyway, I was much younger, you know, but when, anyway, I went to school and there they discovered, much to my surprise, that I couldn't see as well as most of the kids.
Huh.
And so my parents, they told my parents, and my parents Well, you know, to get into school, you have to take eye tests and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, that's how we discovered I was not able to see very well. And then for about 5 years, we were going to this doctor and that doctor, more and more specialized ophthalmologists and et cetera, until they figured out that I was losing my vision rather quickly. And so when I was 10, I had an operation. I had to have an operation, which was a real important one at the time. I mean, what would you call it? Traumatic. Well, it was traumatic for me. It was a specialized thing, you know, and because they basically had to open my skull and get into my optic nerve and optic chiasm, where your nerves cross, your two optic nerves cross,
Yep.
and see what was going on. And there were two parts of the operation. The second part, when they reopened my skull, they said there was a psh sound, like if you opened a beer bottle.
Huh?
I thought that was interesting.
Huh?
But anyway.
What have you been drinking? Yeah. So did they find some sort of a structure pushing on the nerve, or were they able to identify anything? Ah.
Arachnoiditis of the optic chiasm.
Huh.
The spider webby stuff that was, you know, arachnoid, so
Right.
around, that was growing around my optic nerve. So they basically, it was also connected to my brain, and I believe that there's a spider webby substance around everybody's brain.
Okay.
I've heard since then. But anyway, they pulled it away from my optic nerve, and so.
Did that give you some improved eyesight for a while? Did that improve your eyesight for a while? No, okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. Did you have to sit like closer to the board in class, or
Yeah,
and
we sat in the front row.
okay. Oftentimes when a person has motor control problems, whether it's vision or other musculoskeletal troubles, they excel in mental aptitude for mathematics or other things like that, English, you know, language understanding and function. Did you notice that you know, though you were having some difficulty seeing, you excelled in other mental, you know, abilities to do things in school?
I've always been able to do math problems in my head.
Okay.
You know, that's all I can imagine, all I can think of that was different. I mean, I can't think of anything that was different then, other than I couldn't see so well.
Right. Okay.
And,
all right.
You know, I was always the last person to get picked when they were, you know, how when they were picking teams to play a game.
In sports, yeah.
Sports game, and everybody stands there, and you got two team captains, and they go, okay, I want Johnny, and Johnny comes, and the other one goes, okay, well, I'll take Mike, and I was always the last one.
Right, right. Yeah, imagine that any kind of sports where you had to throw or had a ball involved, it would be hard for you to see it coming or going.
Right. I remember one time when I was playing, I had to play baseball and softball probably. And I saw the pitcher, you know, throw, and I couldn't see the ball, but I knew it was coming, so I took a swing, which I'd done many, many times before, and of course missed and ended up striking out. But one time I hit it. I actually hit the ball, and it went flying out, and I was like, I was so amazed that I just dropped the bat, and my mouth must have fallen open. I was staring after that that ball, and everybody was yelling, run, run, run to first.
Oh my gosh.
By the time I got to first base, I was thrown out.
Oh, they caught the ball in the meantime and got it back to first.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Huh. So then when you just started into high school, it sounds like your family moved for your father's job. Out to Oklahoma.
Well, we moved when I was in junior high school. We moved, we actually first moved to a really nice house that my parents had built, had designed anyway, in Fullerton, which is also in the Los Angeles Basin, of course. That was kind of cool because it was right when Disneyland first was built, and the house was kind of on a hill, so, and they flattened out a place for the house, and then there was a bunch of dicondra down out in front of us, down to the street, and behind us was a embankment, and you climbed up the embankment. At 9 o'clock every night, you could watch the fireworks.
Oh, wow.
Disneyland. Because Fullerton's right next to Anaheim, so that's where Disneyland was. So, yeah. Anyway, we lived there for a couple of years, I think, before my, I think that was probably fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. So 4 years. Probably, when I was going to high school, we moved to Taft, which is north of the mountain, so it's not really in the Los Angeles Basin. It's close to Bakersfield, kind of on the, well, I-5 goes right by it nowadays, but it was way out in the middle of nowhere. Back then, it was definitely desert. And
I was going to say, once you go up over the coastal range there, you go right into the desert.
That's right.
And you move out there for your dad's job?
Yeah. If you have ever been there, there's nothing but oil wells.
Wow.
And my dad used to call it the world's largest parking lot because it's flat, you know, except for the mountains, of course, off in the distance, but it's just totally flat and nothing but those service roads that the oil companies build, you know, to get from oil well to oil well. But
where did you go to school then? Bakersfield?
No, Taft High School. There was a movie not too long, well, that was a while ago, but about Taft. Anyway, tap, and I was a member of the YMCA, the High Y, it was called, High School YMCA.
Okay.
And one of the things that they did in Taft, I think it might have been 1960 maybe, was they painted this gold paint on the on Main Street in Taft. You know, it's just a one horse town, Taft. They had, it was 13,000 people, I think, the population, but it didn't seem like it was that big. We lived a little bit away from that in a place for Mobil Oil employees. Anyway, but anyway, one time they painted the street with this gold paint, and if you look straight down on it, it just had little spots of gold in it. But if you look down the street, it looked like it was paved with gold.
Wow.
Street. And,
It's
called El Dorado Day, so there must have been a history of a gold rush there. I don't remember that whole story, but anyway, our job in the High Y, we had a wagon and about four guys. One guy pulling the wagon down the middle of the street, and it was the last thing in the car, in the parade. And what they were doing was picking up all the horse shit. All around the off the street and shoveling it into the wagon. But that was the float I was in.
The cleanup crew.
Right.
Yeah. Did you have some good teachers there?
Taft was just, it was the best school I'd been to, because it was in the middle of the oil fields, and so their tax base was really high. They had lots of money, so they had really good teachers, and
nice.
Well, of course, all the rooms were air conditioned, and everybody, they got sporting equipment, including your sporting clothes and all that stuff was all free.
Wow.
Free pencils and free paper and, everything. It was quite a place. I remember my high school teacher, I might be getting this mixed up, but anyway, I took French there, and my teacher was from France. So, I mean, as versus moving from there, I was there until I was in. I'd be a sophomore. It was during my sophomore year that we had to move from there to Oklahoma.
Where in Oklahoma?
Oklahoma City.
Oh, wow.
And so it was pretty funny, because that next summer, we went back to California to, just to see some of our old friends. And we kept getting, we bought a car in Oklahoma, so it had Oklahoma license plates on it. And we kept getting Californians sticking their head out the window yelling, "Go back to Oklahoma!"
Wow.
we were Californians.
Yeah. Californians driving an Oklahoma car and hearing about it.
Yeah. Huh.
How did you handle that? I mean, that can be really tough for kids, but it can also be a real adventure for kids, depending on how it all goes. How did it work for you?
Going to
Yeah.
Well, there were, you know, good things and bad things. Really, the bad thing, of course, was now I'm in a school where the state legislature wasn't giving any money to education. So,
ooh.
So it was, you know, as versus the air-conditioned luxury of Taft, in Taft too, they had for the, you know, I think it was Spanish I was taking, not French.
Oh, okay.
In Taft, every desk had a microphone on it and microphones, and so you could, you know, you could do your own lessons. You know, the teacher had an equivalent probably to what you might call a computer later days, but he could, you know, narrow it down on individual students and help them learn their pronunciation and stuff.
Hmm.
Anyway, so I go to Oklahoma and they don't have anything like that, and take this Spanish class, and the teacher, I swear, she just stand in front of the room or sit in front of the room at her desk, and we talk about stories about things that had happened at the school in English for about 45 minutes, and then she'd go, oh, we should conjugate some verbs or something, and we conjugate a verb for the last 5 minutes, and then the bell would ring, and that would be my Spanish class.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, there are no screens on the windows, so there's flies, and, you know, it wasn't air-conditioned, of course, and it was a way different experience, you know, much less of a school. Anyway, the thing that I liked about Oklahoma, the thing that just really amazed me, was the weather. Because, of course, I'd lived in California all my life and practically not seen weather. You know what I mean? I'd seen hot days in the desert. I suppose that's about as far as it goes.
Right.
Tornadoes. And,
oh, wow.
You know, cold fronts. Just the kinds of just amazing weather that exists in Oklahoma was just amazing.
Okay.
You know, I'd often, you know, stay up late and just watch the lightning and the storms. And,
wow.
You know, I hadn't even seen lightning before.
Wow.
So it was all new. It's all
nice.
A new thing.
And then did you graduate there from high school in Oklahoma City?
Yes.
Okay. Was it assumed or understood in your family that you and your sisters were going to go to college?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we wanted, of course.
Yeah.
We didn't have to, but...
And did you want to? And this was, I'm trying to figure out the math here. This would have been 1963 or four.
64 would be my first year, our first fall of 64 would be my first year in college.
So the Vietnam War was happening then.
Definitely.
Did you go for the draft? I mean, you had eye problems.
Got involved in the anti-war movement.
Okay.
There, and I think because of that, they tried to draft me, even though I had 4F status on my draft card.
Which is a medical deferment, isn't it?
Right.
Okay.
didn't take my glasses.
Oh.
So they went, well, it didn't matter if I'd taken my glasses or not because I couldn't see well enough to do it. They handed everybody a card, like a computer card, you know, those.
A punch card thing?
Cards, yeah. But it had a whole bunch of spaces on the back of it with little lines and numbers, and each square had its own number.
Okay.
And
well, good luck with that.
They go, okay, now I'm number 4. I want you to put your name. You know, all the draftees were sitting around, and so I had to raise my hand and go, can you show me where number 4 is? And so they show me number, okay, you know, and anyway, that didn't last long.
Mm.
But yeah, they tried to draft me because I was against the war.
Were your parents in support of the war?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they were. I had some pretty serious disagreements with them, and probably one of the worst ones was I had General Hershey, who was the head of the Selective Service Administration.
Okay.
The draft. And he was giving a speech to all the businessmen or somebody, you know, in downtown Oklahoma City. And so I was in the SDS, Students for Democratic Society, and we went down to Oklahoma City and formed a picket line in front of the door of the Sheraton Hotel, the hotel there. And the cops showed up and arrested us all.
Wow.
Threw us all in a paddy wagon. And, well, there was probably about 30 of us, maybe altogether. Threw us all in a paddy wagon, took us to the police station, booked us for blocking the sidewalk, and threw us in jail, and said, "Okay, well, you got one phone call, and you know, it'd be $20 was the bail you had to pay." So.
Oh wow.
And I have to tell you, nobody had $20, so. That was a pretty enlightening thing to be thrown in a jail.
And that was 1964, the fall of, or the spring of 65?
It would be probably 66, 67.
Okay. So you would have been 20, 21?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And anyway, it might have been more for bail. I don't remember. $20 sounds too cheap. But anyway, all of a sudden they came and they said, Keith Green? And I, yeah. And on this way in. And they, I had been bailed out. And I said, well, who bailed me out? And I said, well, your father did. I said, oh. And I got outside the police station and he wasn't there. He just bailed me out and then drove home, which was a long ways from there. So.
Huh.
And so I knew things were bad.
Because
I wasn't like him to do that. So anyway, I finally went home and he was calling me a communist and, you know, all this stuff. It was a bad situation. My mom was crying and my dad was, you know, basically kicking me out of the house. But
did you guys?
Mom prevailed, and he didn't kick me out of the house. But anyway,
Did you come to terms with him on this in later years?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, he never brought it up in later years, but okay. Yeah, no, we never talked about that again.
All right. Huh. What were you studying in college? What were you interested in?
Well, I started in meteorology.
Okay.
Because of my fascination with weather, and but eventually I realized that my vision wasn't good enough to be able to deal with, you know, all the isobars and et cetera and weather maps, and you know, of course, these days I think I could probably have done it, but
well, because you got the computer, you could make the font huge.
Yeah,
but
that didn't exist back then.
Not back in 1966, 67, yeah.
Oh, So, I mean, then it was like magnifying glasses and things like that.
Is that what you used to read your coursework and
mm-hmm.
and study with?
Yeah, I had this little magnifier that I hooked to my glasses. And you could move it down in front of my eye, and I could read with it slowly, but I could read.
Okay, all right. And so I'm assuming then you didn't drive.
No, I've never driven.
Okay.
No.
So if I'm assuming then you were staying at the dorm. At the university, and you'd have to, was there a cafeteria there? Could you eat there? I mean, just trying to think about like going shopping and simple things, going to a restaurant, things like that. You'd be relying on other people to drive you there.
Yeah, you would, except that Oklahoma, the campus at Oklahoma is pretty nice. You know, it's pretty driver friendly or driverless friendly.
Okay, pedestrian friendly.
You know, there it has, of course, on one side of the campus is the dormitories and the cafeterias, and you know, for the dormitories and that sort of thing. And then on the other side of campus was what they called campus corners, which was you know, had, you know, bars and restaurants and movie theaters and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, so you could basically walk to all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any summer jobs in college, or did you work in the fall and the spring as well? Okay.
As a counselor, but it only lasted one year. Oh, and then there was another time I got a job with Encyclopedia Britannica.
Okay.
Selling encyclopedias in the summertime. It's summertime encyclopedias door to door, and it was this real snow job, sort of a job.
Mm.
You know, first of all, I went in there and they were all, well, there were about half of us were black, half of the people applying. And they said, okay, well, come back at such and such a time. And I come back and it's only the white guys.
Wow.
And then they had this thing that you were supposed to memorize that basically was that you were giving them a set of encyclopedias, and all they had to do is write a letter about how great the encyclopedia was. You know, that was what it said, but there was this little box that you were supposed to put 10 cents a day in for 10 years.
Wow.
Which is what it cost to buy an encyclopedia, you know. But I didn't figure all that out. I tried that for at least a week, you know, going door to door, and you know, I'd like to give you a free encyclopedia, and they, you know, get lost, kid. You know, I tried it, you know, it just was not working, and so finally I started going. Well, finally I went to this one place, and the guy goes, "Well, come on in," and I was like. And I got to go in and give the spiel, and he says, "Okay, let me show you this." And he explained how, you know, what I was doing was actually selling encyclopedias because.
Oh, interesting.
It turned out that he was a representative for World Book Encyclopedia, and he said, "Okay, well, World Book costs this much, and let's see, you say 10 cents a day for volume." And he figured it out for me. He says, "Okay, you're basically selling these encyclopedias for this much money."
Right.
You know, and I'm like going, "Oh my God, I have been taken."
Huh.
And so for the next couple of days, I went around going, "You want to buy an encyclopedia?" You know, knocking on doors, and
right.
He's like, "Get lost, kid."
For 10 cents a day for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, "What's going on?" And this guy who was obnoxious in the first place, anyway, goes, "Yeah, we're taking it out. It's mine. I'm going to take it." And so I went and got the manager, Phantom Ranch manager, and she came over and we straightened it all out and got the furniture back before he took it out. Well, anyway, that guy was, he goes, you know, another time, he goes, "Hey, did you ever sell encyclopedias in Oklahoma City?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "I was your manager."
Oh, my gosh. Huh. That's a small world.
Yeah, really.
My gosh.
He was obnoxious there.
Obnoxious there and obnoxious at the Grand Canyon. So when you realized that you were going to really struggle with meteorology, with your vision, what did you do?
I changed the psychology.
Okay.
Just because it was a general science or what do you call it? Liberal science major.
Yep, liberal arts.
Liberal arts major. And really what I wanted to take was my favorite classes were history classes and philosophy classes.
Oh, okay.
Especially philosophy. But I knew you can't get a job as a philosopher, and you can't get a job really as a history major. I mean, unless you stay in a university all your life.
Well, yeah, you're in library science, and once again, you're relying on your eyes.
Well, that's true. That's true. But at least I could read.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't minute things that you had to do with your eyes, but
right.
Anyway, but I knew that you could never get a job if you were, graduate with a degree in history. So what? You know, nobody would hire you. So that's why I took psychology, and it was kind of funny because you know, I ended up getting a job with the Park Service. Well, eventually getting a job with the Park Service and telling people about the philosophy of the Park Service and the philosophy of, you know, preserving the earth and that sort of thing. So I was being a philosopher, and I was also giving, you know, doing work on history. You know, I mean,
doing your interpretive programs
about history and the history of Grand Canyon. So I was a historian and a philosopher.
So it's all going to work out in the end. Is where you're going with this?
Exactly.
Yeah. So when did you graduate then from Oklahoma University? University of Oklahoma.
I graduated with a bachelor's degree in '68, and I stayed for a master's degree and got that in '71.
Where'd you get your master's in? Was that psychology as well?
Psychology. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of. I don't know. You know, I mean, I took psychology because I thought, you know, maybe I can help people with learning, you know, with dealing with their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out, you know, the more I learned about psychology, the less it had to do with that anyway. But what really got me was, so they accepted me to the master's program in psychology, but at the same time, the psychology department was losing their. They had one guy, one professor who was a known professor. You know, had written papers and was generally known in the field of psychology.
Right.
And he was quitting.
Oh my gosh. Right. Statistics,
exactly.
Huh.
All that stuff. So it was, you know, it just, you know, it was really like, it was really hard to stay in the program long enough to get a master's degree, but I did it.
Okay. And so, sorry, you graduated in 1970?
71.
71. Okay. And then what did you do?
Recession, like it seems like the country's always in, and so there were stories. I remember reading a story in the New York Times about this guy with a PhD in psychology that couldn't get a job and he was a taxi driver in New York City. You know that
right.
Was, you know, so I was going, oh man, you know, so. I tried. I know I applied for a bunch of things, these state job, experimental psychology. At least I knew how to run experiments. And but no, I had no takers. I never got an offer. And so one day I walked into the personnel office, or the I guess it wouldn't be the personnel office, the office. Job placement office, yeah, at the university, and somebody had tacked up this this little, little 8.5 by 11 poster that said, "Work at the Grand Canyon," and come to such and such and such and such a time, and apply. And so I don't know what the heck I could, it's something to do for this summer.
And
so I went, I applied and got hired as a dishwasher at the Bright Angel Lodge.
And that was in the summer of 1971?
72.
Okay.
It would be 72 by then. Yeah, because I graduated in December.
Oh, okay.
71.
Got it. December of 1971. Got it. Okay, so that would have been the summer.
Ended up at the Grand Canyon.
All right. We've been yik-yakking for closing into an hour here.
Okay.
Maybe this is a good place to wrap up this first part, and then we'll pick it back up. You can tell me about traveling to Grand Canyon and that first summer working there as a dishwasher at the BA.
Okay.
Great. Well, with that, this will conclude part one, Oral History with Keith and Nancy Green. Today is Sunday. It's November 8th, 2020. My name is Tom Martin. And Keith and Nancy, thank you so very much.
Thank you.